Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Rocket Mortgage. Confidence. Support for the Adam Carolla Show comes from our friends at Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Why can't clients get approved in minutes, not weeks? Or make adjustments to their rate and term in real time? Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans answered those questions and more. It gives you the confidence to buy a home or refinance your existing loan. Fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. That's right. That's what Rocket Mortgage does. Whether you're looking to buy your first home or your 10th, with Rocket Mortgage, you get a transparent online process. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. What else do you need to know? And again, these guys support the show and are great sponsors. So, Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. To get started, just go to rocketmortgage.com/Adam. That's rocketmortgage.com/Adam.
Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. Saturday, August 5th at the Irvine Improv. Don't miss the Podcasting Masterclass with Adam Carolla.
Find out how I started my podcast and turned it into a media empire by attending my Podcasting Masterclass at the Irvine Improv, 10 a.m., August 5th. I'll be joined by the team at Podcast One, the largest podcast network in the world, including my friends, billionaire Norm Pattiz and CEO Jim Burke. This six-hour course will unlock the secrets to get you started and grow your very own show from the ground up.
Plus, Bald Brian, Gina Grad, and Dawson from the show will be there. Get your tickets now at adamcarolla.com. From Carolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, Ralph Macchio, and the director of King of the Underdogs, Derek Johnson. With Gina Grad on news and Bald Brian on sound effects, and now, he's the best around. Nothing's gonna ever keep him down. Adam Carolla.
Yeah. Get it on. Got to get it on. The choice to get on, man. Get it on. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for telling a friend. We love that about you. And we'll see you this Saturday at Irvine, at the Irvine Improv. We'll all be out there, so come say hi for the Podcasting Masterclass. Good day, Gina Grad.
Good day to you.
And Bald Brian.
I'm going to heal you with laughter.
It'll be Saturday.
The heck is that even from?
Yeah, last show, I think. A couple days ago.
All right. So, just had an eventful day or so.
Did you do anything?
I went up to Sonoma.
Right.
And went to the racetrack there at Sonoma. I had a two-part mission, which is drive the Newman Le Mans 935 for the first time and ever for me, and maybe the first time in a long time for the car. And actually, I drilled down on it and thought, I don't think I've ever even driven a Porsche before.
Oh, wow.
How's that possible?
It's not your
competitive
car.
You've, of course, driven a Porsche before.
I have driven a Porsche, but never in any kind of thing other than just taking it out for a walk around the road. I never with any kind of spiritedness at all. Everyone always tells you, rear engine, look out. And with the 935, it's rear engine with the turbo. So you're really supposed to look out because it's not only is all the weight in the rear, but then the turbo comes on in the rear. I don't know who it is. You tell me. I'm not sure what the wiring is, but there's a lot of this in life where somebody says, what are you going to do? And you go, going to drive that 935. And they go, have you driven a 935 before? Yeah, my dad was a 935 dealer. Mm-hmm. I used to drive
a new one every year.
Yeah. No, I haven't driven a $5 million Le Mans car. There's just not that many of them around, and they're all whatever. And then they're like, oh, boy. And then you go, why? And then they go, oh, man, engine in the back, big turbo, whoo, pow. And rear end just comes flying around like you don't even know what happened. And I don't know. I am wired. Like, if somebody said to me,
You had your hernia surgery. Mm. How was that like? I wouldn't go, oh boy. How's your threshold for pain? Do you have a wooden spoon you can chew on? Because they got to take the handle, put it, you'll swallow your tongue. I mean, yeah, you'll be high on goofballs, but you better bite down onto that bad boy. Like, I would say to them, oh, it was no big deal. And it was no big deal. But even if it was, mm-hmm. I would say you're in and out in half a day. Yeah. You'll be back a little Advil. You'll be fine.
Like, what's the upside to making it worse?
That's me point. It's all, life is all this for me. Here's a picture of the haircut I'm thinking about getting, which is the page boy that looks horrible. Here is the page boy haircut that is currently residing on top of my head because I just paid that person to do this to me. I have two different answers. I have do not do it. You're going to look like shit versus looking good, Ringo. One is been done. The other is thinking of having this done. Why do we worry? Why? I can't tell you how many people gave me the 935. Oh, boy, that's a handful. That is a handful.
You know who that guy is? You know who is that guy? Not cars, but that guy in our lives? Dr. Drew.
Oh, my God.
Let me tell you a story of when I was at Loveline Call Screener, a fat Loveline Call Screener, and I was going to have, I had my gallbladder taken out. I had gallbladder disease, and I needed my gallbladder removed.
Oh,
and
God.
It was a laparoscopic surgery. It wasn't a major surgery, but it was, surgery. And I was kind of freaked out. I was 24, whatever it was. And I said to Drew, the only doctor I knew, I said, Drew, what's above this and that gallbladder surgery? He goes, well, where are you having the procedure done? Daniel Freeman Memorial Hospital in whatever that is down there.
That incompetent Jew?
Daniel Freeman Memorial Hospital. And Drew's response was, good luck.
Oh, my God.
Good luck.
He has the worst bedside manner.
He literally guffawed. Good luck.
He is.
Hope you wrote out your will.
He's the worst.
Make your arrangements.
Make your peace.
Get your affairs in order.
Of course, we had the same hernia surgery, and for him, it was like, I remember I was having it on Friday afternoon. I said, see you Sunday. You will not. You will not see me Sunday unless I'm have wings and I'm playing a harp. And I'm like,
I'm haunting you.
Yeah, like, no.
I'm on your shoulder, and the evil version of me is on your other shoulder.
Yeah, I'll see you Sunday. So you're not coming in Sunday, boy. That's writhing hour. You'll be writhing.
Prime writhing time.
You'll be writhing in pain at home, unable to move. And I was like, I've never had hernia surgery. I've never had any kind of surgery, anything major whatsoever. But I feel like I'll be. Look, mostly based on my jobs used to involve, hand trucks and cases of stuff going upstairs and getting up on a roof and stripping plywood and stuff like that. It used to involve roto hammers and stuff. This involves driving a car to a place with, high back stools on it and air conditioning. Like, I think I could, if I can sit up, if I can walk into the studio.
Lean forward.
Yeah.
Yeah, because we're comparing it to going to the kitchen and eating soup. And if I can do that, I can come talk into a microphone at Loveline. That's what I'm basing it on. I'm not a strength and conditioning coach for Nebraska.
Right. If you're out of the hospital, i.e. outpatient procedure, then if you're at home, you might as well be in that, comfortable studio.
Oh, no, says Dr. Drew. You are going to be laid up for weeks.
So how long does it take you to get back? 2, 3, 4 weeks?
I was, when I get in the middle of a build, when I'm building a house, I get tunnel vision and sort of insane for what I'm doing. And if I'm building a house and I've had to wait on something, it's an interesting topic, one we should explore maybe at another time. But my son has no metronome for things. My daughter, and I remember it insanely vividly and clearly because I'm still wired this way today. My daughter, when we're going to redo her room and she orders her shaggy egg from Bed Bath and Beyond or wherever, a teen, whatever, wherever she's ordering her egg from, that's going to come in. She's like, when's it coming in? When's it coming in? It's coming in on the first. What time? Before noon. What can we do? I mean, the thing came in last night. So it's in the box. Yeah. Let's tear it open and look at the top. I said, I don't want to. It's too late. It's time to go to bed. Just the top. Just stop. She's got this thing that I used to have, which is, and I still do. When I was a kid, if somebody said, you get a mini bike or a skateboard or something on Christmas, I just have crossing.
Jail tally marks.
It's a...
You're like Max Cady, who's just doing push-ups and dips, the tattoos of the scooter all over your chest.
Schwinn.
Yeah, I... Well,
sorry, Hoffy.
Thank you. It lets you know you have a miserable life. It means all you have is this thing to look forward to, in the distance. But Natalia still has that wiring, and I have that wiring. And so I ordered, as I've told you guys before, I ordered these mirrored doors, these big mirrors, and I wanted to hang them. And it was 6 weeks, kind of whatever. And it was an experiment. I wanted to see if I could go to a mirror store, order big framed mirrors, two of them, and hang them like closet doors. Ooh. So I could have beautiful closet doors versus the ones with the anodized aluminum or the bifolding or the whatever. And the things, like, as I was going into the hospital, they're like, oh, they're delivering the doors today. And I was like, oh, gosh, get my hands on those doors. I had the procedure Friday afternoon, evening, got home in the evening, went to bed early because I was drugged up, woke up at 6 a.m. on Saturday and went, got to hang them doors. Mm-hmm. And I remember it very well. Like, I stood up, I sat up in my bed of another home, five blocks away.
Oh, we get it.
Yeah.
You're wealthy.
Home.
Christ.
My home.
And I don't remember which home I was in.
So I had to commute from Dubai, but luckily I had a private jet. Yeah. So I said, I sat up in bed and I said, I feel pretty good. And Lynette did the, what are you doing? And I did the, I think I'm going to the other house to get some work done. And she's like, are you fucking nuts? You just had surgery. And I just went, I feel good. And if I don't feel good, I'll come back. But right now, I feel good. And I got up and I left. And then she did that thing you see in all the movies where the wife really appreciates the man. She went, ugh, and like plopped back in bed. Always feels good.
Serve yourself.
Yeah. I'm going to have sex with my guma, or I'm going to go work on the house we're going to move into.
Well, make up your mind.
Yeah. So I felt absolutely 1,000% fine. Speaking of Lynette, though, I mean, the only time the doctor drew, and this was insane to me, is her friend got like ovarian cancer, and she said, like, ask Dr. Drew what he thinks. What does he think? She's a young girl. She's like 32, her friend, And Drew's like, oh, she'll be dead in 6 months. Like, she just said, she'll be dead in 6 months. And I just went, oh, God. And then I got home, and then Lynette was like, well, what did Dr. Drew say about Jennifer? And I was like,
he went off the most recent evidence.
Brian, didn't he do the same thing to you?
He did it to Adam about me. Because Adam's like, I'll paraphrase, and you can correct me. A tumor like this, what's the thing? He's like, well, if it's growing, and you're like, well, like, that's how they found it. It was growing. It's like, well, bad news.
Oh, yeah. No,
he called it a death sentence.
Well, it was tough for me because Jennifer, my wife's friend, was she was probably dead in 4.5 months when he called it for 6. So when Brian's thing came about, it was probably only 2 years later, maybe a year and a half later after the Jennifer thing. And so I was pretty calm with Dr. Drew. And as soon as I started with Brian, and then as soon as I hung up with Brian, I immediately called Dr. Drew and wanted to know what the real skinny was. And he was basically, I can't remember verbatim, but he had the same tone and about the same timeline as Jennifer had.
And he was one for one at this point.
He was dead nuts on with Jennifer, so I didn't see any reason to think any otherwise with Brian, which was pretty brutal.
Well, and that's the thing I don't understand about Dr. Drew. He's like the nicest human on the planet, but where's that bedside manner we're all looking for?
He has a switch, not a dimmer, but he has the
toggle.
Flip. Yeah,
he has that, but he has between
doctor and Mister
and
Mister Dr. Drew.
he's wired like a like Candy Spelling. Like
it's a cliche, but it's been said many times before.
Say it for the fans,
no,
but we get it.
He's done stuff to me my whole career with him. It's like I was walking through the airport and a woman came up and screaming at me. You're what right do you have to dispense? And I was like, she was not screaming at you. Because I've been present for enough of those events where the person sort of came up and said, hey, just because you have a PhD doesn't mean you know about, whatever, but not screaming, you know what I mean?
That's just your garden variety Jew talk.
Yes, yes. Everything needs to be doused in creatine, like supersize
it. I do it.
Screaming at the top of her lungs. What right? And it's like she was not screaming at the top of her. She came up. She had a stern voice, maybe an octave louder or up than she could have been, but not screaming at you at the top of the lungs. And then calling me stupid. No, she didn't say that. She questioned your credentials or whatever. Screaming, you're stupid in my face. Like, I choose to round down in those particular departments because I don't want to go through life feeling like I'm the victim and people are screaming at me and stuff like that.
You're adjusting to the mean. You're adjusting to what's a little more, you know, of zero.
Yeah.
Zero being, you know, the unexaggerated either direction version.
I had a situation. I don't know why I remember this on occasion. I've had situations where I've been around people with other witnesses and go, can you believe how condescending that person was to you when I said, no, I'm speaking in front of Congress. They said, good for you. I said, oh, I just heard good for you. Like, I didn't hear it your way.
And you just heard the court reporter say it back.
Oh, believe me. They were condescending. I was like, I was standing at the same party you were standing at when we were having this conversation. One time, a million years ago.
This is an Omega Man situation where you don't realize you're the crazy one. Like, you have Asperger's and like, I think everyone's tone is normal. It's like, we all heard their crazy tone.
I was with Jimmy Kimmel. We're walking through a Save-On or Rite Aid or something, buying solution for when he used to wear contacts, I think.
Because
when he would sleep over, he'd need the solution. I could never get it. I was always like, I can't sleep over. Why not? I don't have solution.
Yeah.
Why not? It was like, it's always a big deal. And I was like, get some solution. Keep it in the glove box. It's $8. You know, so we're going through there and we ran into a friend of mine who was from the Acme Theater, who I worked with, fella my age who I worked with. I hadn't seen in like 4 or 5 years or something. And he ran into him like in the aisle. His name was Burn. I was like Bernie or something. And the guy was like, hey, Adam, what's going on? I was like, oh, hey, Burn, how you doing? What's up? Oh, nothing. And he said to me, like, what have you been up to? And I was on MTV and like K-Rock or something. And I said, oh, I'm doing a cable show and I got a radio thing I'm doing. He's like, oh, good for you. And I went, oh, okay. And I asked what he'd been up to and whatever. And we like left. And then we were like walking out to the car and Jimmy's like, oh, he knows what you've been up to. Believe me, he knows you're on MTV. He knows you're on K-Rock. He lives here. He's your age. Like, he understands. They keep tabs. You know, you can't miss you. And I was like, right. Well, maybe he doesn't have cable or something. He's like, oh, he knew. He just didn't want to give it up. Like, he's the
give
guy.
Me the satisfaction.
He didn't make it. You know, you made it. He didn't make it. He didn't want to give that up. And I was like, I never considered that.
I wonder who was right.
We'll never know.
But it would have never entered my brain that if he said, what have you been up to? Right. I would have never thought in a million years. On the other hand, it's why I'm shocked when people lie. Like, you have no idea, especially if you get into court cases and things like that. People just lie and you just go, how can they just lie? Just sitting there and just lying and go, oh, they can. They do. Like, all the time. It's weird to you because you go, well, I have to tell the truth about this, that, and the other. Many people just lie.
Their hand's not even on a Bible.
And it doesn't, if you don't lie, it doesn't really occur to you that people do that and do it. Or if you wouldn't, it would never occur to me to run into somebody from my improv troupe who was all over MTV and pretend like
I'll play cool, Corolla.
Yeah. Right. Hey, still doing the comedy traffic school? You're back on the construction site. Like, I would simply start with seeing them on MTV and it would be fun.
Yeah, I saw you on blah, blah, blah.
Well, and you have to be a pretty good actor. I think I'd lie a lot more if I thought I was good at it, but I'm not. Yeah, I'm a terrible liar and I'd love to just tell the truth and have a normal conversation.
I will share some interesting stuff with you in a second. First, I'll tell you about Vault. Yeah, streaming the largest offering of classic series documentaries and cutting-edge specials on history. Love these guys. No commercials. New videos added every week. Series like America, The Story of Us, and Modern Marvels. We love Modern Marvels. Especially after they fixed a ratchet there at the top. That. And hundreds of hours of videos exploring ancient Rome, U.S. presidents, military history. It's all there. Watch anytime, anywhere on your favorite device. Our listeners get an exclusive extended 1 month free trial. So how do you get that free trial of all the information? Well, go to historyvault.com/Adam. Again, all the old shows, all the history, also beautifully kept in one vault. Go to historyvault.com/Adam. All right. So Brian saw the King of the Underdogs,
the
documentary that we've acquired and is now available. Ralph Macchio's in that. That'll be, and Stallone is in that as well. We'll have that available at chassis, chassy.com, as well as all the other things. I will take you guys. You guys can go to adamcarolla.com if you want to see this. I can show you guys what it looks like and sounds like to go in that 935 Porsche once around Sonoma, which is about a minute and 50 seconds. Yes.
And you also did a simulator for this, yes? That was posted on Instagram, so I was wondering when that occurred.
I have this bad thing, which is I know Laguna Seca, the racetrack, very well. Sonoma, not only do I not know it, I don't like it. I know it just enough to know that I don't like it. I'm not fast. It's too technical. And it's really, it's a headache. It's too much. It's too technical. And unfortunately, the way the timing worked out is the only place this car was going to be was Sonoma. And if I want to get behind the wheel, I had to go do it. So not only, it's like saying, I'm riding a surfboard that I've never ridden before and it's supposed to be difficult to stand on, but I'm doing it in big wave country.
Fiji.
Like, yeah, I'm going to the 15 and 18 footers. Like, Sonoma is very technical, very difficult. It takes tons of seat time, tons of laps to figure out what the line is. I don't know any of that stuff. I raced there once. I was like, oh God, do I suck? I can't even figure this out at all.
It was and after then, a day of wine tasting too. So
sure.
Add that in.
And then I went back and my car just broke. Like on the first lap, and I was almost relieved. But you guys can enjoy the sounds of this. Go to adamcarolla.com. You can enjoy the visual component of it as well. Car's a 4-speed. Another 935 that I'm trying to follow. The front end's real light because there's no weight on it, so you have to kind of, it doesn't steer like you'd like it to steer. But I guess if you learn how to drive it, you can figure it out.
And this doesn't have a speedometer, so I can't ask you those questions, right?
I have no idea. Maybe you're going 125, 130
wow.
into the back straight. You go into this. It's really technical. Like I said, there's lots and lots of turns on this thing.
How long do you get to just open it up for before there's another really hairpin turn?
Not that long. That's why when people always want to know, like, how fast are you going? How fast are you going? It's like, there's so many turns. It's like, how fast are you going through the turns
right.
is the question. Bit of concrete barriers on these tracks that you just don't hit. You go to a hairpin at the very end of the thing, and then you go right back down the straightaway.
Did he just have a little fire coming out the back? Is that normal?
Yeah, the guy in front of me is shooting fire. Yeah, he had a cool 935 and a little fire shot out when he would downshift his car, which
nothing
is
like a
cool
relaxing day in wine country.
I was just going to say, that seemed stressful.
I got to say, there's two kinds of sweating. There's a kind of a, well, there's three kinds. There's the I'm chopping wood and it's hot. Then there's I'm having sex. Then there's I am focusing so hard with every fiber in my being, and I'm wearing long johns and a hood and a flame fire retardant suit that you just literally, you've never sweated so much in your life, and you've never felt more depleted. But I was trying to examine it, which was, I feel depleted. The guy in front of me, who drives a 935 for a living and is driven on Sonoma and has just completed his 7,000th lap on Sonoma, he doesn't feel depleted.
Sure.
Because he's not concentrating with all his might. The key is not to get so up in your head that you react so harshly to one thing or the other. So it's like sort of like, how do I let my body relax while my mind is racing? Is a kind of way to approach it. But by the time I got, so what I did, and if you guys are interested in how to best way to learn, the best way to learn stuff, there's just sort of a, hey, this makes sense. So here's this car. You've never driven it before. It's got this weird tendencies with the rear engine and the turbos and all that kind of stuff. And so what are you going to do with this handful? And it's weird. The pedals are too far off to one side. It's got some weird idiosyncratic stuff going on in it and stuff. Never driven it before. And I'm used to totally different cars. So what do? Well, you go, all right. The guy who knows what he's doing, who is the track instructor there and knows the car and the track well, first thing he does is he put a passenger seat in the car, put a harness in the passenger side, put a harness in it, and then he's going to drive you around for five laps, just so you can feel what it's the line, that's get cool. The line, feel what it's like to be in the car. Okay. So then you go do that. Then you go, all right, what's next? Well, what's next is you guys will switch seats and he'll sit next to you, but he will bring it up, bring it down, break. You'll see his hand is sort of, you kind of get the lay of the land if you do this stuff enough. When he's putting his hand, he's patting it like he's feeding a retarded kid a cracker. When that hand goes down and starts this pat move, it's a Benny Hill move.
The retard cracker feed.
Yeah, the retard cracker feed. It's a Benny Hill move. He'd do it to his little bald old guy. But when the hand starts going down, that means start slowing down. If the hand really starts going down, it means like you better start braking. And then it'll start like move in, move out. Zero communication verbally because the car is so loud and you're wearing full face headgear, helmets and stuff. But you can get exactly what he's saying. So then you do 10 laps of that. And then when you're done with that, now it's time for the guy who's a professional who drives the 935. He's going to go out. And he'll go at 7 or 8 tenths, and then you just stay behind him.
Okay.
Well, the next thing you know, 2 hours into it, you're just driving the car. But you just got to get in that way. It's an easier way to go. But
so, were you happy with your time? Because I know you were just not knowing how that was going to end up.
Yeah, I was, and I'll get into more details later on. I ended up, the thing that was funny is, I got out of the car, and I got a car, and I was drenched with sweat, like just covered sweat and covered there, and like felt like I ran up the stairs of the Empire State Building. And then I got out, and all Leno's guys were there, and like, you get ready to get in the car, you ready to get on the track? And I was like, and then it was funny because they're like, yeah, it's hot out here, and I'm like, it's not that. It's like this is flop sweat that's just pouring out of me. So. We did our bit with Leno. The Leno stuff, I don't want to step on too much. You'll see it when you see it. It was fun. But God, flying home with Leno was awesome. It was so awesome.
More awesome than normal?
It was because there is an airport that is a private airport that's near Sonoma.
More private than Charles Schultz? Because that's a pretty small airport.
Yeah, that I would consider Charles Schultz like what Burbank is to LAX, but this is a private airport. Right. And we literally just hopped in that van right after driving around with Jay. We finished our bit. The track closed at 4, and they had the track. Leno's guys had the track until 7 or something. So when we finished at like 6:30, just jumped into the SUV, 5-6 people, drove right to this private airport, just swiped the key card, drove right to the jet, got out of the jet. From the time you break the hymen of the driveway of the private airport in your SUV to the time that you're airborne is way less than 10 minutes.
Oh, sure.
That, I mean, literally drive out, get out of the SUV, throw your backpack in there, get onto the plane, and you are literally, the gear is coming up, and it's been 7 minutes from the time you pulled onto the property.
I've flown private once, and my explanation is the in-flight experience is great. It's a little bit better than the first class, all that stuff, but it's the walking up to the plane at your leisure and saying, oh, I think I'll leave. I know I'll leave in 5 minutes. Nope, 5 minutes to go.
You didn't ask to get frisk just so you felt at home?
No.
Just walking up
the airport. So nice. Glorious. Yeah. So ended up back. And so it's like ended up back in Van Nuys like 51 minutes later. And that was that. It was awesome. All right. Brian's got, because I think our guests are here, but we should do a Baldywood for our King of the Underdogs, which I saw as well. So I'll be able to Wayne as well. Yep. First off, SNHU. Considering college, whether you're attending for the first time or going back to complete your degree, there's 3 common financial aid mistakes you can avoid. Discover them at Southern New Hampshire University by texting MOVE to 554433. SNHU's mission: make higher education acceptable and affordable. And I should say accessible. Although these days, not even acceptable. Accessible, acceptable, and affordable. They've devoted everything they got to learning and not to profit. Tuitions are skyrocketing across the country. SNHU hasn't raised online tuition in years. Learn about SNHU's... learn about SNHU plus the top 3 financial aid mistakes and how to avoid them by texting MOVE to 554433. That's MOVE to 554433. SNHU. All right, Brian, let's do it.
Do it.
For Baldywood, he will tell you if a movie's good. Brian will review the flicks that he's seen upon the big screen or in his Netflix queue. Before you spend bucks, remember his taste sucks. He loved that train wreck piece of shit, Transformers 2. Hooray for Baldywood!
This is great. We've all seen the movie. We can all talk about it. Full title, John G. Avildsen, King of the Underdogs. It is directed by Derek Wayne Johnson, who I think is coming in a few minutes. It is a biography of John G. Avildsen, the director most notably of Rocky and the Karate Kid, also Karate Kid 2, Karate Kid 3, Rocky 5, Lean on Me, which is one of those movies I saw as a kid over and over again, and I couldn't tell you today how good it is. All I know is that I saw it a bunch, and I thought it was the most powerful movie of all time when I was like a 12-year-old.
Yeah. It's great.
So I'm Morgan Freeman, like cleaning up the schools and all that stuff.
Right.
Yeah. This features interviews with Sylvester Stallone, Ralph Macchio, Burt Reynolds, Martin Scorsese, Luke Perry, Stephen Baldwin, all of whom he's worked with, Carl Weathers, Talia Shire. And fortunately for us, the viewer, John was a enthusiastic video taker. He took a lot of home video, a lot of behind the scenes, a lot of rehearsal footage. So we get a lot of like home movie footage, like a young Matthew McConaughey auditioning for 8 seconds. That was great.
That was awesome.
The idea that he shot so many of those iconic scenes before they were shot or as they're being shot sometimes or rehearsed is what you call just sort of found gold. When you're making a documentary and you're thinking, well, what do we do? Do we use claymation to recreate the rehearsals between Stallone? And no, we have video of those guys rehearsing and choreographing the fight scenes and stuff.
Yeah, and it's great to see, like I said, the young Matthew McConaughey, the young Renee Zellwegers, the people before they were stars. Weaver. He worked with a lot of, I'm sure the director will talk about this when he comes in, but he worked with a lot of people before they were stars or their first role. Like Daniel Craig was like a young Nazi in one of his movies before he became, you know, James Bond down the road. It's awesome to see these young guys and girls sort of coming up, being discovered by John G. Avildsen. He was also an early adopter of Steadicam technology. There's a lot of did-you-know type stuff. And John G. Avildsen has kind of... He is not a household name. The movie makes that very clear. He's also, he's a, for a guy who's directed very, won Best Director, an Oscar for Rocky. He directed some huge iconic movies, but is a bit of a footnote, at least the not the household name thing. Doesn't have the notoriety maybe you'd think
no,
he would.
No, not at all.
So you find out a lot of did you know stuff, like the Steadicam thing. He was supposed to direct Staying Alive, which I thought was kind of like amazing. Like, there was a lot of near misses for him in his career. And I love, the thing I love the best about John, when you get to know him through the movie, I love it how he got choked up describing like moments in his own movies.
Yeah, not like the Karate Kid.
Not like I'm so great, but more like this touched me emotionally and here's why it should touch you too. Speaking of which, Adam, we have that clip where John is describing the sort of key emotional scene in The Karate Kid where Miyagi gets drunk and he starts rambling about his past and a bunch of war stuff.
And I'm sorry to interrupt. Didn't they say that the scene almost got cut?
Yeah, and there were, the studio was like, well, get rid of this scene, cut it down, you'll lose it, it's distracting from the karate and all that stuff. And he's like, no, this is the heart of the movie, this is what's going to make it, you know, rise above just, you know, silly karate movie.
Well, they're also, yeah, I mean, I could hear, it's the refuge for dumb people who don't have notes or legitimate notes. Go, I feel like we could pace it up.
Yeah, there
was, can we pace it up?
There was a lot of punching and kicking in the previous 45 minutes, and then for about 2.5 minutes, it really is punch and kickless.
Yeah,
it's just shiftless in my chair.
Can we just pace this up?
Yeah, compared to the punching and the kicking?
Yeah.
And nobody ever argues with pace it up.
Yeah.
And it's a horrible note because oftentimes they're talking about getting rid of like pathos and scenes.
Yeah,
and
the
and
heart then, of the movie.
And then setting up the next punching and kicking montage.
Yes, and when you have... like in to bring it back to the Hammer, like when you had that great scene with the candles, you know, you have this funny going on either side of it, but then you have this one sort of quiet moment and it sticks out. Everyone remembers that scene because it's a quiet moment that sticks out above all the other,
but
for a different reason.
Thank you. But if you have no,
not in a good way,
ability to give, if you have no ability to really give notes that are meaningful, then you just go, just pace it up. Get out of there.
Yeah.
Yeah, and this was the love interest in the movie because his dead bride or his wife. Mm-hmm. All right.
So anyway. Let's hear the clip real quick. It's John describing the process of fighting for that scene.
Scene. Daniel gets him in bed and
he's talking to an audience.
And turns to go. I say, "Oh, before you walk out, turn and bow." And he did. And that's an example of where you've always got to be in the story. Because when I saw it, I said, gee, that's what that guy would do. Because he has such admiration for this surrogate father that we would all like to have. This guy is a surrogate father because he's wise and loving and has humor and, you know, so Ralph got it and did it, but they still wanted to cut the scene because it slowed things down.
Of course. So
forget about surrogate father. Papa son number one for the Ace Man. Dad.
And for LaRusso.
Yeah, that's true.
Move over. Oh, by the way, not that you're here. But if you were here, you would move over. Right.
So here you have this guy, John Avildsen, his 70s, I'm assuming he's 7 years somewhere in that neighborhood, getting choked up, voice quivering, right, over the, right, remembering this moment from 30 years, something years ago. And it's a nice moment on top of just describing it, as you realize that John Avildsen, the man, has grown, because earlier in his career, in his life, they talked about he didn't politic, he didn't play the games, he was
a little hot-headed,
hard to work with, and here he is, this guy who's maybe, I don't want to say softened, but you're seeing, you know, the emotional side, and it's a sweet moment. If you're a film lover, you have to see this movie, because you're going to see behind-the-scenes stuff you've never seen before of some big stars. It's 73 minutes, it's not a huge investment, so check it out. I think it's chassis.com?
CHASSY.com.
Check it out there. Good movie.
Hooray for Bollywood!
I think you can get it on iTunes as well. Mm-hmm. I do think that that's what Nate was telling me, but Gary's going to look into that. Either way, yeah, it is a that my thought was, if you're at all interested in how anything works in movies or how things are constructed, mm-hmm. or just, I think there's a couple of reasons. You know, like I always say, people like sports, but why do they love sports? You know, what is this thing? What is this thing where Sonny's telling me can't, he's so excited about the start of football season, whatever. The
gambling.
Things that,
gambling.
Yes, the things that pull, yes, addiction. No, there's something, it touches, it's more of a, it's like I talk about, like when people talk about, you know, we're supposed to be vegans. Like when I think about prime rib, I start, a
salivating.
Little bit of semen comes out of my mouth.
Seminating.
Not my own. But yeah,
stored from years past. Yeah.
Yes, I can pull up, summon some semen.
Make you can sure buy get that. Or rent it on iTunes.
There you go.
The semen?
Yeah. So what do we love? Why? Well, when you see Rocky and you realize Rocky, there was a point when Rocky wasn't Rocky. It was nothing. And then when you see the behind-the-scenes footage, you realize everyone who's doing this doesn't know it's Rocky yet either.
Right.
And has no sense of what this could be, should be, would be. And I also know it could be nothing at the same time.
Yeah. Unknown movie star, first-time writer. Yeah, this could go nowhere.
And the millions of sort of potential directions things could go. Like when he's saying... You forgot about the scene when they're at the ice skating rink and he's walking and she's skating, like he's trying to kind of keep up with her in boots and she's skating. I love the imagery of her. For some reason, he's decided to walk.
Yeah, she's so graceful and he's a lug.
While she skates. And then the fact that they were alone, and you never see people alone at an ice skating rink. And then they're like, oh, that was supposed to take place at a diner. And it's like, oh, that would have been horrible. It would have been horrible if it was at a diner, just sitting there talking back and forth, you know.
It would have been a thousand times.
Horrible. And then there was like, yeah, but the ice skating rink, but they couldn't get enough extras. And it wouldn't look, how could you do an ice skating rink without ice skaters and extras? I'm like, well, what if he went there after closing? Yeah. I was like, perfect. But
you're making something out of it.
You're making something up. And at the time, and you know there's somebody next to you going, I don't get it. What would you be doing it? And that's going to seem empty and hollow. And I don't know. I think that we should just get him back to the diner. Like, just the fact that you get to see how that stuff unfolds. Yeah. And then you realize it's really just a metaphor for your life. You know, who you marry, what your decisions are, what happens.
But I'm supposed to do this.
Yeah, it's just this really... there's something as a human being that attracts you to that. And now it's so easy. Of course, great scene, great movie, great whatever. But then they didn't want Stallone to star in it. Mm-hmm. They wanted this, you know, and that, all of that.
They talked about that with Pat Morita too in Karate Kid.
I want
Pat Morita. Oh,
no,
over my dead body.
Well, Pat Morita was the owner of Owls from Happy Days. And there could not have been a goofier... probably stereotypically offensive, you know, in terms of his ethnicity, character on television. He was a kooky character on Happy Days.
Right.
And he was broad. He was big and broad.
Enough of the other end of that spectrum, the wise old sage.
Yeah, like you would never... Oh, also on Sanford and Son, but it was the Happy Days character that whoever you initially pitched that to, you probably could have never gotten around it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so I understand, like, that reaction. I'm not going to Pat Morita do this, but it's called acting.
Yeah.
That's the part that's insane, that the people that are inside of acting don't understand acting. When
like a man show guy doing, I don't know, a romantic comedy.
Never worked.
Very true.
It'll never work.
Hey, listen, when I was at K-Rock.
Kimmel could pull it off. Hey-o!
He was good in that Man Ponds commercial. Cable Ace nominated from Man Ponds commercial.
Sure.
Jimmy Kimmel. I work for one of the most decorated program directors on one of the biggest stations in the world.
Damn right, peeps.
And not him.
What?
And he literally said to me, look, we want you to host Loveline. We want you to do it as Mr. Burcham, the shop teacher. And I said, how could that work for 2 hours a night?
And Jim said, good luck.
And no, in that case, in that particular case, in that case, no, Drew would have been encouraging because he always says the opposite of what you want. He went, we could do it. Why not? You can pull that off.
Drew, the company man, too.
Right. Yes, sir. Right away.
Right. And I said to my program director, I can't do that. That is not going to work. And he said, well, we don't know. And I said, what's the problem? And he said, we know Bertram's funny. We don't know if you're funny. And I thought, wow, touché. If at this level you can't suss that stuff out, we're in a lot of trouble. But that's so even inside the business. All right. So Derek Johnson, the director, and Ralph Macchio is out there. First, I'll tell you about True Car. Shopping for a car, make sure you get real pricing on actual inventory. People configure cars online all the time only to find out they are not available. Let's go with True Car. Real pricing on actual inventory. Not pricing offered by True Car, but pricing from an actual True Car certified dealer. Over 3 million cars sold by over 13,000 True Car certified dealers nationwide. True Car users save an average of 3,000. That's right. 3,000 bucks off MSRP. So if you're looking for a new car, or you're looking for a used car, or you're looking for a barely used car, which is what our own Chris Maxpata did with, I think, a Prius with 200 miles on it, when you're ready to buy, visit True Car, see what other people are paying for the exact same car, have a much more confident buying experience with True Car. All right, we'll take a break. We'll bring in Derek and Ralph right after this.
Hey, listen up.
I'm Dog the Bounty Hunter.
And I'm his wife, Beth, of course.
And we're looking for trouble. My wife, Beth, and I have a brand new podcast called Dog and Beth Looking for Trouble.
Which, by the way, you are always looking for trouble.
You're all
in trouble, whichever the case
is. No, I'm always getting you out of trouble. Who are we after?
Everybody.
Politicians. Celebrities. We're telling on all of you.
Everybody.
It's the hunt is on.
Telling it like it is.
Dog and Beth Looking for Trouble. We'll be able to talk to our fans a lot closer than we could on television.
Join us on a backseat ride-along every Tuesday starting in July.
Be sure to tune in
at podcastone.com, the Podcast One app, or subscribe on Apple Podcasts.
For Nicaraguan Name That Movie with Adam's buddy Oswaldo. See if you can guess which movie this famous line is from.
Get him and body back.
If you said The Karate Kid,
get him a body bag!
You're correct. Now, back to the show.
Derek Wayne Johnson, Ralph Macchio, both here from the documentary King of the Underdogs, which we've procured, and you can find it now at chassis.com. Good to see you guys.
Great to be here, man. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
So let's talk about how the documentary came about. What was the, Derek, I guess this is for you first, why this very unlikely subject?
Well, you know, this could take all day, but I'll make it short. John Avildsen's my favorite filmmaker. Rocky and the Karate Kid are my favorite films. And I just grew up fascinated by this guy with this weird name on screen, directed by John G. Avildsen. Like, who's that?
Right.
And we know Spielberg and Scorsese. We know all these guys. So who's this guy? And 5 years ago, I found him online and sent him an email. And he sent me one back. And we started this friendship. And then I wanted him to direct a script. And so he said, look, send me a check for $1,000 and the script. If I like it, I'll do it. If I don't like it, then I'll script doctor your script for you, make it better. And if that's worth $1,000, send it on. So I did. I wrote a check and sent the script. 2 weeks later, he calls me. He goes, hey, Derek, John Avildsen here. Get a pen and paper. Your script sucks.
Wow.
Okay, let's do this. I live in L.A. now, but I didn't live in L.A. at the time. If you can't tell the southern accent, I'm from Texas. And so I flew out months later and met with him in person. We had this amazing time together. We cried together when we talked about that scene that you guys just talked about when he bows to Miyagi. And it was just crazy.
I felt it slowed the film down a little too
much.
The
pacing was off.
A lot of kicking beforehand.
Yeah, exactly. I offered him another script, which he didn't charge me for, and he turned me down. So now I fly back, and I'm like devastated. And then it clicks. Hey, John, listen, if I can't make a movie with you, what if I make a movie about you? And he goes, You want to work with me, kid? That's it. You're in.
$1,200.
Yeah, exactly. Right here we are.
He passed in June. Is that correct?
Sadly, yes.
Oh, but he was able. Everyone, I guess, should see a documentary about themselves before they pass.
Right. He certainly did, and we were at the world premiere they had at Santa Barbara Film Festival. That's the last time I saw John, and it was a great night. It was a great night to experience with him, and he wasn't sick, and to my knowledge, at that point. And so it was, his legacy. He shaped my childhood in films like Rocky, Save the Tiger, a great Jack Lemmon performance.
Yeah.
But Rocky is, that was my childhood there, and certainly him casting me in The Karate Kid had a hand in changing my life. So it was. It was nice to experience that, and the great reviews that the King of the Underdogs is getting now. I'm just here to help carry that legacy and open up people's minds and hearts to this guy who was an incredible storyteller.
So they had your audition for Karate Kid because you just captured everything on tape, which is such a just treasure trove of material when you're making. And you're making a documentary, because I've made a few. It's always like, do we have any footage of that? No, but we can do a courtroom artist rendition of what that would have been like had somebody been there with a camera. But he filmed everything.
He did.
So insane, especially going back 30 or 40 years. So how old were you? Where were you coming from? What had you done before Karate Kid?
Well, The Outsiders had just come out.
The Outsiders had just come out.
So, I guess that was spring of 83. And then my audition for The Karate Kid was in John's apartment on the upper west side of Manhattan. And that videotape of my first reading of Daniel LaRusso is available on YouTube to be seen. I mean, my first meeting with John and the first reading of those words as that character is very cool. I got a call that to audition for this movie called The Karate Kid, and I was like, oh, please be a working title.
Yeah, it's funny.
Who knows if it was a hit, I'd probably have to carry it forever. I was foreshadowing.
Did you ever train at a place called the Jet Center for that out here?
Out here, very possible.
In like Van Nuys, California, or something like that?
That sounds like someone would have a good argument based on the fact that my brain ain't what it used to be.
Wait.
But I was out here training. I had about 5 weeks of training when I was out here because I live in New York.
So you came out here. Mm-hmm. You started training. They got you a martial arts coach.
Right. Pat Johnson, who played the referee in the movie.
Still... to this day, the scariest person on the map. It's not the fighters.
It's the ref, even in
the UFC, the guy with the mustache and the braids going down to his hips, or Big John McCarthy or something.
Exactly.
Fight! That guy's the scariest guy to me.
Point, winner!
Right.
Can't you just say point?
Yeah, that guy scared me.
Yeah, he did all the fight choreography. He was our stunt coordinator, and I trained with him in the Goju, classic Goju style, as they say, as opposed to the...
And the thing was filmed out here?
Yep. It was shot in Burbank Studios at the time, which is now Warner Brothers, when Columbia and Warner Brothers shared that studio.
Mm-hmm.
Then Columbia is down at Sony. And the tournament scene was shot in Cal State Northridge.
So two things. One is, was there problems with people wanting to test you after that movie?
Everyone, it's funny because the first AD on that film said, Stallone had to deal with a lot of shit, so you're gonna have to be careful because people are gonna want to kick your ass after this movie. I think
Colin
after
Quinn
the movie,
was the first AD.
Exactly, how he sounded. Let's do Irish Colin Quinn.
Jay Moore doing Colin Quinn is what your AD sounded like.
Exactly. Cliff Coleman was this guy. He's like 6 foot. Whatever, and he had that kind of, okay, we're rolling, we got speed, and let's shoot the picture.
Right,
he was one of those old school guys, but I think what happened is when people, I just think they just felt so sympathetic to my slight 98-pound weakling frame. They just forget about it. you think you're, you're probably not. So I never got my ass kicked.
What was then there was there four or five of those?
There were three that I did, two that I talk about. No, I talk about all of them because the check cleared on everyone. It was great. There were two others though that I there was one other, And Hilary Swank was in that.
Oh,
movie.
That's
the next
right.
And that's
two-time
right.
Oscar-winning
whatever happened
actress,
to her? What yeah. in the hell?
Fell
that
off the map.
You and her have a couple Oscars between you.
That's right. Very good. Very good. I always say that. How does she deal with the typecasting? How does she deal? And then they remade it too.
So, Derek, for you, you continue to make films, other documentaries. In the pipeline?
Yeah. I didn't set out to become this documentarian, but of course I've seen what you guys do, and it's awesome. But I caught the bug, and now, like, it's crazy. I'm doing another underdog-type documentary now called Stallone. Frank, that is. About, yep,
yes.
You guessed it.
I hope you focus
Frank
on his
Stallone.
Singing. He's a great yeah. singer.
He's
take
a wonderful
back.
Singer.
He's a good
oh,
singer.
Take it back.
Light a trash can up. Let's get around. Let's take it back, people.
It's going to be fun. He's a character, man. He's one of the best storytellers I've ever heard.
He's great, yes.
I was in an Italian restaurant here in L.A. I was at Matteo's on Westwood, and I was talking to the maitre d', and we're waiting for our table, and we're at the bar, and there's some really good music on, and I'm like, and they play, like, you know, the classic, you know, Sinatra and Dean Martin and all that stuff, and I'm like, who is this? Is it Bobby Darin? Like, it's very classic. He's like, no, Frank Stallone. He comes in here all the time. I'm like, hey, this guy's great.
Yeah, he's fantastic. I mean, he there's
he's
nothing
on
he
the
can't
standards
do.
That's just yeah. fantastic. Yeah.
He's a great guitarist too.
It's weird. It's there's a thing that he has to overcome. Obviously, like, I mean, we all have that. Hey, you're the Karate Kid for the rest of your life. He's Stallone. He's Sly's brother for the rest of his life. And then there's some sort of diminishment because your brother happens to be an amazing filmmaker and actor and storyteller, whatever. Somehow we have to take a little pound of flesh out of you because your brother lives in a double gated community. We can't get to him, so we got to come to you. I don't get that math. It's a weird math. The guy, well, I talked to Sylvester Stallone about Frank Stallone for an hour at Maria Menounos's.
What a switch
a
that was.
Yeah, how many names could we drop in one sentence?
Until Vin Diesel showed up and then corralled Stallone. But like, his brother, he's perfect. Like, I'll drop another name. Seth,
here it comes.
McFarlane. There it is. Seth McFarlane and I were going to have lunch, and he lives up in Mulholland, whatever, up in the million, up to the hills up there somewhere. So I said, we'll go up to this place up on Mulholland and we'll eat in this little cafe. And of course, I arrived on time and he arrived 10 minutes late. So I was just sitting there outside this cafe, and here comes Frank Stallone with two dudes that, like, average age 107. Huh. One guy was a beat writer for the Herald Examiner. Followed boxing. The other guy was an old boxing coach, and these, like, grizzled old dudes. And this was just Tuesday lunch for him. Like, find people that are ancient and have lunch with them and have minestrone soup and talk about the 50s and boxers. And that was his entire thing. His vibe is so insane.
Yeah. And he'll sit there and he'll come up with a story, or he has an opinion on everything. By the way, he's a boxing aficionado, art aficionado, a music historian. Like, you go to his house and it's just memorabilia everywhere. But this guy knows his topics. And yeah, he'll go to lunch, like you said, on a Tuesday and just have this crazy, amazing lunch with who, God knows who. And he'll sit there and he'll just tell you these amazing stories the whole time for 2 hours. And then you're like, so, guess what I did today? And he's like, oh, time to go. Gotta go shoot some guns.
Had lunch with me?
Yeah.
Well, exactly. Let me pontificate. You started with a Greek, no, Caesar salad. I noticed you ignored the croutons, but you ate them.
He gets up to the prison, becomes a soothsayer. You're going to go home and be very disappointed by what's on TV.
It's a weird thing because, now, Sylvester probably doesn't have as much. He probably writes his stories down and then makes money off of them more than just shoots them out into the ether like Frank does. But they both have this crazy, probably Italian storytelling, weird drive in them. And it's just it's literally a DNA drive thing. Like, when I met Sylvester for the first time, it was 2 hours of him telling stories about boxing and everything, cars and horses and anything. So yeah. It's such a weird, and then there's the people, like my family has like the quiet gene. Like you could tell, I got more information from Sly Stallone in an hour and 41 minutes at Maria Menounos' house. I've gotten my entire family in 53 years of being on the planet. Like it's just a weird, what is that drive?
Sly probably told you why you didn't have a middle name.
Yeah. He started asking how his parents are doing.
Do it. Yeah.
So this, now when is this coming out? And then you get to talk to Sly for this, right? Because he'll talk about his brother.
You got to talk about his brother.
Yeah. Well, we actually already filmed Sly. We it was cool. Well, first of all, it comes out in 2018. We don't have a date yet, but it was so, get this. So like on a Monday, we show up at Gold's Gym and we film Arnold Schwarzenegger. And then the next day we go to Sly's house and film him. And then like a couple weeks later, we're at Jackie Stallone's house. So it's just like talking about name dropping. And we're just sitting there interviewing all these people for Frank. And it's just crazy. Like all these people are signing on like, yeah, I've been waiting years to talk about Frank. You know what I mean? Like you're doing a Frank Stallone documentary. Sign me up. And it's just crazy, man. Like he worked out with Arnold. Like Arnold's like, hey, come to the gym and we'll work out and you can film it. And
right.
Like, all right. So it's just crazy.
I can't figure out if we should all be insanely jealous of his life or try to avoid it.
Right.
Or maybe both. Like there's probably a strong, it's hard to make a strong argument for, I want to live the life that guy's living and I want nothing to do with that life with the same person. There's not many guys. There's guys who are on, you know, death row. We can make that argument. And then there's Elon Musk. You know, I wish I was living that guy's life. Right. But it's hard to make the same argument about the same guy. He's probably one of the few guys you could say that about, right?
Both sides of that coin.
Yeah.
I was thinking about why Frank Sloan doesn't get the respect maybe he deserves. And I think a lot of he was in his brother's projects, maybe people have a bad view of that. But then just remember how great he was in Barfly. He was the bartender in Barfly.
Oh, my God.
And he was great. He kept getting in a fight with Mickey Rourke. Have you seen Barfly?
Yes.
A million years ago.
He kept getting in a fight with him, or they kept wanting to fight, and they finally duked it out. That was a great on-his-own, standalone performance.
And speaking of themes and the best around, he followed up with his Rocky theme, or his song for Rocky. Oh, God, you got to find that. It's going to drive me nuts now. But
was it like the wind, Flight the Wind?
That was
kind of the top of my head now.
Yeah.
That was
Dirty Dancing. I don't know what it was.
That's Patrick Swayze.
She's Like the Wind.
Oh,
yeah, She's Like the Wind.
The best Around was initially written for Rocky, and it was in The Karate Kid.
Oh,
Bill Conti. Bill Conti, the composer, and I think he had that, it was a leftover.
Wow.
But wait, didn't we learn that the Karate Kid song was supposed to be in Rocky 3, and that's why it has the lyric, history repeats itself?
Yes.
Ralph,
we found out the...
Well, maybe
wait, wait, we
Esposito
found out the...
Joe Esposito.
Yeah.
Right. So, yes, we found out the Survivor... Was it
Frank
the Survivor song?
No, it was the Joe Esposito song that has the lyric, history repeats itself.
And I said to him, why did you say history repeats itself
it
when
it supposed
didn't
to be
happen?
In Rocky 3, and then the Survivor song bumped it. I think is what...
Right, so that might be the
story.
Case. So my 50-year brain is
but this is a story that was told to us.
But at least I'm in the right franchises.
10 years ago.
Dawson has thoughts.
I got your Frank Stallone song. Is this what you're talking about? Come on, baby.
Come on, kick it up.
Oh, 1,010% of what I'm talking about.
Far from over, man.
Could be a guilty. Could be a tool tune.
Absolutely.
Could be a tool tune.
All I see is SNL in my mind right now.
Tool tune is a song that you crank when you're near a car.
Far from over.
But if you pull up at a light and the window's down, you'd roll it up.
Great Dawson.
But you would
song.
Never.
Great call.
If this song came on your radio, you would never change it, right?
Absolutely not. You'd seek the song out.
Right.
You know, I was silent through this whole trying to figure out what the song was because I listened to this every single day.
Oh, wow.
Every day. But which I love. And you got to see Frank perform, man. You got to see him perform live. He performs at Vibrato Grill and Jazz.
I'm going. I get an email twice a week.
Yes. It's awesome.
Telling me he's performing, and I always just move on, like the ones I get from IKEA saying they're having a shelving sale. But I'm going to heed his next email and go to that thing.
Hey, Vibrato's awesome. I've been there. It's like a jazz club. It's like set up like an old time. It's Herb Alpert's place. Herb Alpert runs it.
Yeah. So he has to fight this sort of semi unfair, but also you do bring it on yourself a little bit sometimes when you're doing boxing stunts mm-hmm. and doing impersonations of your brother and like sort of being out there all the time. You have to sort of fight this image versus reality, which is, yeah, that guy's a really good musician. He's a trained singer and it's really good, not a gag, but good to see live. Does he do this song though?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, good.
It's
how many times?
Yeah. Well, Ralph, like, you know, what he's talking about, like, so Frank literally picked up boxing right. and he was coined Rocky's brother. Like, you didn't pick up martial arts. Like, you didn't pick up karate, right? Please say.
Triple black belt.
See, exactly. So,
I get kids coming up to me and say, you know, I'm going for my black belt on Tuesday. And it's like, that makes one of us.
Well, and I don't want to give away too much of the movie because it's so great. But one of the best lines in the whole documentary is, the crane move is bullshit.
Robert Kamen.
But such a beautiful move, and the explanation for it was so great. But I love that they're just like, here's why it's not what you think it is.
Right. Yeah, it's the magic of power of suggestion.
Power of the story.
That's right.
So it's available, King of the Underdogs, available on our website. So we're trying to fill it out with good documentaries that other people have made and then good documentaries that we have made as well. And the thing about documentaries is, as I've said, is if you're a regular person who comes from a regular background, you don't think you get to make documentaries. It's only for like these types of people. They get to make documentaries. And then you make a documentary and you realize, oh, you could make a documentary. Mm-hmm. Anyone could make a documentary. It's just be into the subject.
Yeah.
And have it be organic. That's how you started the documentary. It wasn't somebody gave you a check and said, make a documentary. You went, here's something I'm into.
Absolutely. I mean, I am a filmmaker and I was doing narrative feature films that no one's ever heard of. So I'm not even going to try to plug them. But it was like, okay, let's do this documentary because that was something I was really passionate about. And I realized, like you said, you can do this. Like, look, if you are interested in a documentary on earthworms, go do it. You could actually make a documentary on earthworms and probably sell it. I mean, if you're passionate about a subject, go make a documentary on it.
All right. Should we do a little news and you guys hang out and crack wise?
Sure. Let's do it.
Give me the news with Grad. News with Gino Grad. Breaking viral. All those crazy Trump tweets. Give me news with Gina Grad. Trouble in the Middle East. Celebrity drunk meltdowns. Deep news with Gina Grad.
Got it.
The news with Gina Grad.
Well, authorities in Florida have captured the last of 12 prisoners who fled an Alabama County jail in a scheme involving peanut butter, according to the AP. Walker County Sheriff James Underwood says prisoners used peanut butter to change the numbers above a door and trick a new employee into opening another door that led outside.
Hold on.
Yeah.
Not since the last ADT commercial have I seen so many white criminals.
Yeah, almost everybody.
It's Florida for you.
Baker's wow. dozen.
Is there one amongst them that does not look insanely guilty?
The one on the left corner at the bottom looks like he's 12. That's all I'm seeing.
But guilty.
Oh,
but
guilty.
Very guilty.
Yeah.
The peanut butter redemption.
The one on the other side on the bottom looks like a Sarah McLachlan, will you help today? Just pennies
yeah,
a day.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, that's
keep
rough.
The stray cat alive.
Yeah. So they use peanut butter to change the numbers over the door, and then they use their jail uniforms and blankets to climb over razor wire atop a fence. The Martin County Sheriff's Office announced on social media that local deputies and the FBI for violent crimes captured the final escaped inmate, 24-year-old Bradley Andrew Kilpatrick, on Tuesday night, about 20 miles north of West Palm Beach, Florida. He was originally arrested for marijuana possession. Pretty sad. And I think I can pick him out. Oh, I think he is 4 in on the bottom from the other picture they showed of him. And so they got everybody back, corralled him back in the jail.
Well, the good news is there is bragging rights if you're the last who's snatched up by the feds, right?
You idiots all got caught within 2 hours.
Like, everyone probably anteed up a pack of cigarettes before you broke out, and now you get all the cigarettes.
Yeah.
You'd have to have that. Like, yeah. And it motivates you.
King of the Underdogs right there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
King of the Underdogs, too.
You know, ever since the invention of the dryer, the clothes dryer, I figure, like, successful breakouts have gone down like 87%. Because every single movie I saw, the guy jump over the fence, land in the backyard, the clothes would be hanging on the line, and they would grab the civilian's clothes and they put them on.
Yeah.
Nobody's clothes are hanging anywhere on a line anymore, and thus, what are you going to do when you break out?
I had the exact same thought just now. Like, what? That's the real problem, is what do you do once you're out? If you're in Florida, maybe, and California too, maybe for that matter, but maybe you could get to the beach somehow and get in the water and come out like, hey, my clothes are stolen. You know what I mean?
I just have these orange and white pants.
And maybe some good Samaritan will be like, oh, you're naked, or you're in your underwear or whatever. Some good Samaritan hands over a t-shirt, and you're on the land.
That works every time.
It doesn't work every time, but I'm saying.
Ryan, you have such a criminal mind.
The filmmaker gets it.
I have a naked beach story real quick.
I'd like to hear that.
10 years ago, I'm visiting Malibu with my mother. We're on the beach, and all of a sudden, this surfer just walks up and just gets ass naked with his dong hanging out and everything. My mom's like, oh, my. Oh, well? And I'm just sitting there like, Mom, no, don't look. Don't look. And he's just changing into his wetsuit. And I'm like, you know, we're from Texas. You don't do that. Mom, stop looking at his, you know.
Right.
And, so there's my naked mother surfer story. I just ruin everything?
No, that was awesome.
It was like a good commercial in between the news.
My mom's going to listen and be like, don't say dong.
I only went to naked beaches when I lived in Greece.
Really?
Yes. Wow. Yes, I looked amazing.
Where was John G. Avildsen in his home videos back then?
Yeah.
That's all they were.
I think if I broke out of prison and I was in the orange jumpsuit, mm-hmm. I would just go to the side of the freeway and start picking up garbage.
That's right.
Oh, yeah.
Blend right in.
Right.
Like the Joker escaping with the school bus and the Dark Knight, just blend
right in.
Or, guys, you could wear a shower curtain. And hide yourself, please. Everyone got that, right? Right,
Ralph?
Take a nice little lady in there that you fancy.
Halloween, that's right.
It's very good.
Sorry, Ralph.
It's okay. I didn't write it. And people still wear the costume.
That was a great costume.
The costume's amazing.
That was a fantastic
costume. I see them all the time.
Well, a 17-year-old airline passenger caused a stir on a flight that had just landed and was still taxiing in San Francisco when he opened the emergency door, climbed onto the wing, and jumped onto the tarmac, according to sfgate.com.
This is why I only fly with Leno.
Yeah, avoid such
rarely does that happen.
I don't want to be burdened with this kind of events.
Yep. Now, Brian, this made me think of you because I believe you were the one that said if it's not an American airline, then kind of all bets are off.
Sure.
Copa Airlines, flying from Panama City, had just arrived to SFO.
Yeah, that's not a real airline.
Yep. When the teen pushed open the emergency exit door he was seated next to and bailed, fellow passengers were shocked, said it happened so fast, no one could do anything to stop him. Workers on the tarmac saw the boy leap from the plane, held him until police arrived and placed him under arrest. No word why he did it, but passengers sitting around him said he seemed anxious and fidgety. The plane arrived safely at the gate. No flights were delayed, but he had to get off that plane.
But this is definitely... that this didn't happen here kind of thing. This is some airline that's not... It's just.
You think he was imported?
Well, what was the
SFO.
It was at Copa. Oh, Copa Airlines flew into SFO from Panama.
Oh, Panama
City. Wait, is it Florida? Sorry. This could be a twist.
We'll try to figure it out.
Copa is a South American airline. I've flown it before to Panama.
All right.
Panama City.
That makes more sense.
And then to Brazil.
You know what's a bad... I was coming up with sort of bad signs for your nation, and people were tweeting me and sending these ones in, and I just sort of started the topic. They were doing an expose I saw on the gang MS-13 from...
Long Island, New York.
Yeah, but they're from El Salvador or Nicaragua or someplace, wherever they are.
There's a big prison.
And they were showing their prison. And when your prisoners are kept in a prison, and the prison bars are rebar that we use for construction, mm-hmm. that they take number 4 rebar or number 5 rebar, and they just weld it together. El Salvador is where they're from, so it's scary. That's a bad sign. It's weird. It's effective. It works. As a matter of fact, we should probably do it to save a few bucks, but we have our own manufactured prison bars.
We have special prison bars.
Bespoke prison bars. You go somewhere where they either have the prison bars or they do the bars on the outside of the house out of that construction rebar. Not a good sign.
Bad indicator.
Bad indicator.
Where the jail's at.
That's right. Sorry.
No problem. Well, the White House acknowledged this week that President Trump put out a statement on behalf of Donald Trump Jr. about his son's controversial meeting with a Russian lawyer during the campaign. According to the Washington Post, while flying home from Germany on July 8th, aboard Air Force One, Trump personally dictated a statement in which Trump Jr. said that he and the Russian lawyer had, quote, primarily discussed a program about the adoption of Russian children when they met in June 2016, and that the subject of the meeting was not a campaign issue at the time. While White House Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders takes issue with the word dictate, she does defend Trump, his desire to help his child. It's the audio.
Why do they? Who admits this? Why does it come out? Why is he saying this?
That Trump wrote this speech.
But why is he admitting it? Did somebody else say it?
No, I think he
certainly didn't dictate.
But why would he say? Why would he offer this?
It was reported in the Post.
Oh, it was reported
first. Yeah,
it was
reported in the Post.
And then he
said, you'll do what you can to help your kid. Yeah. He's a good boy.
Oh, I see. Right. Okay.
He certainly didn't dictate, but, you know, he weighed in, offered suggestion like any father would do.
Don't care.
There you go.
I just don't care about any of this stuff.
It's a lot of ado about this one.
But what about the 150 before this? Like, no. I think about all... there's a weird thing that goes on in life, which is I feel like everyone is vying for everyone's attention, mm-hmm. and you're kind of a sucker if you go for it, because if all you have to do is look back to last week or the week before or 15 days before that, and there's five other ones, and then they go, yeah, but you should be really interested in this reason.
Time.
And my thing is like, why? I have so much to do. There's so much to life. Mm-hmm. Why? You can have whatever thoughts you want to have, but why is everything so important this week? And then the same people that say it's so important just move on to whatever the next, there's whatever the topic, whatever the side of the aisle you're on. Why with the jingling keys? I get it. They're trying to get ratings, but why do we go for it every time? Mm. Like, what do we care?
Yeah.
The people that like Trump. People hate Trump, hate Trump. What do we keep going for the jingling keys for every single time?
Yeah, and that's the funny thing. Now that you put it that way, in government, you could see people possibly crossing to the other side of the aisle if their policy gets instated or if something goes their way. But for the rest of us civilians, I don't see anyone going, you know what? I wasn't a fan, but now I'm his biggest fan, or vice versa.
But it's also this kind of thing where you go, the guy's a prima donna, he's unscrupulous, he's a horrible parent, a horrible father, and a horrible everything. And then you go, did you hear he tried to dictate the whatever on his jet? It's like, that's well within your perimeters of what you've stated this guy is. That's matter of fact, it's smack dab in the middle. It's not even a five, mm-hmm. according to this. Right. What you say this guy is.
The precedent set.
This is not, he said he'd like to have sex with his daughter. Like, okay, so he dictated apology to his son or an explanation to his son. Where does that land? Because that's a 1.5, according to who this guy is. So whose needle is this moving?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's more support for the people who think it's adding to the obstruction of justice. But again, it's not, you're right. This is not a death blow. This is just one more little thing.
In a weird way, I think you're doing yourself a disservice if you are trying to make a case against somebody and you go, it's sort of like when the cops, somebody tries to evade the cops and then they run over somebody and they go, we want murder one or we want murder two or manslaughter. And they start listing what the guy did. The first thing he did was an illegal right-hand turn on a red light. It's like,
what else
all
you
right.
got?
Then he exceeded the posted speed limit by 11 miles an hour. After that, also wasn't wearing a seatbelt. And it's like, this is all detracting from the murder.
Yeah.
You're distracting me.
We're muddying the waters.
Yes, I'm getting confused. You should really just go murder one. Like, just focus on the murder, get the conviction.
Right.
All this is just getting everyone confused. And also to the point that by the time you do get to the murder, if there is a body, we're all like, oh, please, another story about this guy's bad driving. We've heard enough.
Yeah.
You'd be better off. The idea is, I don't think you get more results with more volume. Mm-hmm. I think you're better off just really just distilling down to the beats that you really want to hit and hit those beats.
Anything else is just diluting it.
It's sort of like
desensitizing.
You turn on the news and like, hey, did you hear what Trump did? And you're like, oh, please, another what? Turn right on a red? You wouldn't get to the murder one part
anymore. That's a very
anymore.
Good point. Well, Yahoo News reports that the concerns over at NASA's headquarters are quite literally extraterrestrial now. This is why the space agency now has a job opening for Planetary Protection Officer. The gig includes helping to defend Earth.
Tommy Lee Jones.
Yes.
In his greatest role.
Planetary Protection Officer. Now, this they take this very seriously. This is to defend Earth from alien contamination and helping Earth avoid contaminating alien worlds it's trying to explore. Pays around $150,000 a year plus benefits. Now the
that's
job
not enough to protect Earth
really
from alien death.
Who's the guy that makes sure you wake up and you don't die in surgery?
Oh, the anesthesiologist.
Yeah. He gets paid a lot because he only has one job and he has to do it really well. The job isn't as crazy as it sounds. One of the jobs of NASA's Planetary Protection Officer is to occasionally travel to space centers around the world and analyze planet-bound robots. The officer helps ensure we don't accidentally contaminate another world with a probe landing or by zooming or by photographing something. So it's kind of logical, but it's also to protect Earth from aliens.
Yeah, I'm not so worried about contaminating other worlds. I'm an ugly American. We plant that
flag.
That's
pretty ugly American right there.
Yeah.
Not worried about contaminating.
It's just not high on my list.
Sure, yeah, I understand.
It cracks my top 20, but not my top 10.
But what if there's an adorable, fuzzy little alien that can't breathe because we brought a rover?
If there is something, it's in the form of algae somewhere, right?
Yes, or so advanced that probably we couldn't affect it with whatever little trinket we sent out there.
We couldn't recognize it.
Yeah.
Right.
Something that's capable of interstellar travel or interdimensional travel or something.
So you want to apply?
It sounds like a decent paycheck.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not going to get it done for the Corollas, but every bit helps. And I don't know if it comes with a jumpsuit. I feel like it should come with a jumpsuit. Something
probably,
that zips up in the front.
Yeah. It at least comes with a key card and a lanyard, but maybe a jumpsuit for you.
You know, it's a power move when the astronauts wear the jumpsuit, like the NASA jumpsuit, and then the boots. They wear sort of the military boots. Like, they don't wear topsiders in a jumpsuit or flip-flops. No, they wear the boots and that jumpsuit. That's all business.
You probably wouldn't get the jumpsuit. I was watching Outbreak last night, and you'd probably get the Outbreak thing
zipped up with the stupid bubble.
Because, you're against contaminants. Right. You'd probably end up in the yellow suit with the glass
that
and all
old-timey,
that.
Old-timey.
The boxy sort of.
Or like Peter Coyote in E.T. I don't know why.
Mm. Yes.
Good call.
That's
nice.
Just where I
went. Deep pull, Ralph. Well done.
Well, I would do it if it came. Yeah, you'd look like a Blue Angel. Blue Angels get to wear the jumpsuit and then like the boots.
The pressurizing. Right.
Yeah. No, just take the jumpsuit. I'll take the jumpsuit. And then some sort of calling card, something with a label or crest on it. I could see myself doing
pretty
that.
Pretty sweet.
And I'd probably be able to some sort of badge or something I could whip out when I get drunk.
That you flip out like with a flippy
wallet.
Take
a little break from my cock, and now I could whip out something else.
Get you a discount on certain movie theater chains.
Yeah,
it'd be one of these things where if you got pulled over, you'd go, "Oh yeah, let me go for my wallet," and then you'd go, "Oh, I'm sorry, this is my Protector of the Galaxy badge. I'm sorry. Let me see if I can find my ID. Sorry, just won't you hang on to that?
Can I look at that real quick? That's pretty cool.
Yeah,
yeah." Speaking of whipping your cock out, a new product lets men seal their urethra shut before sex, supposedly in order to protect their penises and stop anything getting out, according to the New York Post. Jiffy Tip.
Anything from getting out or getting in?
Well, here's the deal. It's described as a, quote, adhesive flexible sticker covering just the urethra for containment of urine and semen. So, little sticker you put over the front.
So, you're saying the golf tee's broken? Because I don't see... I mean, if it ain't broke.
Very, very good point.
Literally.
Yeah.
Now, the stickers, they're sold in 3-packs for $6. They were designed to replace condoms. However... As the Jiffy Tip website notes, sealing your penis shut is not an effective form of contraception.
Oh.
And health experts advise it won't prevent STDs either. So
what's it
do
worth?
It, yeah, just Whoa, a novelty
hold on.
Item.
I gotta see this. This is going to historically go over as good as the dental dam did in the 90s when like everyone was worried about AIDS and everything else. And it's like, well, what do you do when you want to perform oral on a woman? Well, you take saran wrap and you just sort of tastefully lay it down over the infected area. And I was like, Drew, this is the worst. Well, no, you should use a dental dam. It's like, this is the worst idea. Who's going to use this thing? Because it's two different thoughts. Like, one is, I'm going down on you. which is pretty pot committed.
I'm listening.
When it comes to a relationship you have with other adults. You know what I mean? Like, you're in. I'm going in. And then the others, but I worry gravely about myself and my personal safety and your hygiene. So I know you super well, and I don't know you at all. In the same move.
I want to see what I'm doing. I don't want to be exposed to what I'm doing.
Yeah,
it's just a weird, it's
a mixed message.
It's saying, I know you incredibly well, and I don't know you at all, sort of simultaneously.
Or possibly worse, I know you incredibly well, and that's why I'm using this.
Right. All right. We will go over what's in this, and then...
There's a diagram.
Oh, here's this clean...
All right. Okay. All right, hold on.
All right.
Okay, we'll tell you how to use one of these things. I'll tell you, look, this is ridiculous, this idea, but my condom with the fake birthmark woven into it, in case it ever comes up in court, that's a good idea.
That's true.
Here's a better idea. LegalZoom, man. It's National Make-A-Will Month. At LegalZoom, preparing for your family's future is the most important thing you'll ever do. Or certainly over the summer, man. So why don't you go to LegalZoom.com/prepare. You get a free kit designed to provide the tools you need, and it's all in one place. So whether a will or trust is right for you, you'll get special discounts, an estate plan checklist, an ebook, and other info to help you decide. No excuses anymore. You don't have to go to an expensive hourly attorney. You just go to LegalZoom. Oh, Gergis hates this, man. They don't do the billable hours. That's how he makes his bones over there. So if you have more questions, you can always get the advice from their network of attorneys available in all 50 states, since LegalZoom is not a law firm. But they'll help you, and you can do it at a much more comfortable price. It's LegalZoom.com/prepare. Dawson.
Go to LegalZoom.com/prepare today. There's no obligation, just great resources to help you protect everything you care about during National Make-A-Will Month. That's LegalZoom.com/prepare.
So my condom with the birthmark, Ralph, you're a pretty big star.
Mm-hmm.
And let's just say you're traveling when you get with a groupie.
Mm-hmm.
And later on, that groupie decides to sue you for paternity or whatever else. You wear the condom with the birthmark worked into it.
He insists that I crane kick him in the head.
She claims that he had a very distinctive Pepe, brings it up in court, talks about the birthmark, the shape of Florida, on the right side of the Schwanz, and then you just pull it out and you're on a beach in front of Derek's mom, just getting into a wetsuit, just pull it that thing right out, and everyone goes, no birthmark, moving on.
No birthmark on that dong.
Case closed, moving on. That's where it comes quickly. In. Thank you. Yeah. So wait, we're going to figure out how to use this?
Yeah, I'd like to see this step-by-step. There we go. Yeah. So you clean the tip. Then you align the shield with the little sticker over the top. Then you bond to the skin. And then, most importantly, you enjoy real sex.
But what happens during orgasm?
It doesn't blow the jiffy tip?
Yeah, that's bigger. The question.
I feel like it's going
to
have that.
Cartoon where the gun fires backwards?
Yep. Yeah, you're flying.
Your duck bill goes to the other side of your head?
Ralph, pretend you're a celebrity endorser for this product. Explain to us how it works and what happens.
Right. Oh, my God. I don't know. I think that the whole point of blowing the jiffy tip is the end all.
I think much like the cartoon, too. I think what happens to your balls is what happens like when Yosemite Sam swallows the dynamite and just goes boom, it just puffs all out. And then a poof of smoke. Poof of smoke comes out of the flap. Yeah. I'd be satisfied with either one of those outcomes. Either you sail across the room and break a mirror with your ass, or you go Yosemite Sam boom. Yeah. All right, let's do another.
All right. Well, people want to know how you take your steak. So according to a database on orders from the Longhorn Steakhouse chain, the majority of Americans order their steak a certain way. I have the list of the most popular way to order your steak to the least popular.
I have a great reality show. It's a hidden camera reality show. It's called We Go Out to Dinner and Piss Jimmy Kimmel Off. We go to a great steakhouse that he picked out, and then every single one of us orders it burnt to a crisp. Like, we need it well, extra well, beyond well, and then we just have close-ups of Jimmy's face.
If there's a drop of juice on a plate, I'm throwing it back at you.
You ruined the whole, we should be in a sizzler. What are you doing? And then Baby Doll Dick's my agent would go, baby, that's the way I like it. You don't like it that way. You don't like steak if you like it that way. That'd be the whole series, just him being disgusted. But we'd have to work it out where everyone wanted it more burnt than the next.
Like his, but twice as much.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So the most popular among Americans is the straight up medium. 37.5% of people love that. Medium well came in second with 25.8%. Medium rare after that. Now, your buddy, James Baby Doll Dixon, well done, 11.7%, and rare at just 2.5%. Now, the people I know love rare. They like it bloody. A lot of my friends order it that way.
I thought it was weird when I was a kid, although we didn't eat steak, but I just felt like the red part felt weird to me as a young person. And the older I get, the more I get, there's probably more flavor to it. But at a certain point, it's a little distracting if, in fact,
you have
it's
a
raw.
Pool of red water at the base of the
Yes, head. It's weird. Although I ordered a tomahawk steak.
What's that?
That is big bone in, kind of looks like a tomahawk, hence the name.
So the bone, the big bone, it can almost hold like a tomahawk, and the steak off the edge, like the blade.
You kind of might share it with somebody. Maybe
you should.
You would.
Quite a few ounces, but hadn't had that one before. Very good.
Is that your new favorite?
I had it in, but I had it in Detroit, and we were just there, I don't know, what was it, last weekend or something? But we're showing the 24-hour war.
Oh,
the documentary.
There it is. Brontosaurus.
Yeah, we're looking at the tomahawk steak. Very nice.
Gentlemen, do you have a favorite way to order your steak?
I fall in the lame middle.
Yeah.
With medium, sometimes medium rare, but medium. Yeah, my wife is of the burn it. Crispy, blackish gray.
I'm gotta get it for the new Kimmel project.
Order the chuck. You know, like, why am I buying the $28 a pound meat just for it to be, you know, 2 inches in diameter and black?
Do you think now? So here's a bigger.
Don't get me started.
Here's a bigger overall question. My agent and Jimmy's agent, John Stewart, and everyone else's agent, James Baby Doll Dixon, eats like a 11-year-old in general, and this is just an offshoot of that. It's an extension of that. And I think if you could have gotten hold of most of us when we were 11 and said, how do you like your steak, we would have wanted it more well done. But as the years wear on, you appreciate things a little differently, right? And I call that the yummy phase. Is your wife generally in the yummy phase? Like, does she, because like, she wouldn't drink scotch, she would have a Mai Tai or something like that.
Or a Cosmo. Yes.
Right, right.
Yes, yes.
Does she put ketchup on a hot dog?
No. Okay. She won't probably go near a hot dog.
She don't want to get divorced.
She'll go all the wrinkle, though.
But she's a nurse practitioner, so she's got the E. coli and the salmonellas
in
the back of
her head.
And that's why sushi doesn't work with her
either.
That
was my next question.
Oh, right. Yeah, it's got to be
parasites, and
that's got to be.
She's seeing people come in and out, bed, whatever.
Well, then we have to make an exception for her because that's just got to ruin it.
Yeah, she backs it up with medical evidence.
On the other hand,
but even so, it's ridiculous.
Your wife not liking sushi, big picture, could be a win for you in your life, because I have a wife and kids that want to eat sushi flakes for breakfast for $89 a box. They're like, we're going out for more sushi. Like, no, don't take.
You know, be good on this sushi. More sushi.
Yeah. So it's a weird thing. It's a double-edged sword. But you go out and she gets a well-cooked teriyaki.
That's right. Exactly.
All right, let me tell you about Onnit. Yeah, you heard me talk about Onnit here before. Amazing supplements like Alpha Brain, the Buffalo Meat Warrior Bars, the MCT oil. We have all that here. We eat and ingest all that here. The Onnit CEO, Aubrey Marcus. We did a little Take a Knee, my motivational podcast. We talked about going from college athlete to running a multi-million dollar health brand and when to abandon your dreams. And I think we're going to hear a little clip of that. Is this still all me talking, Gary? Okay, this is me talking. What I'm trying to say to people, because we always do this, hey, you got to follow those dreams, and you got to hang on to them. You got to shoot for the stars, you got to hang on to those dreams. Like, I'm saying, no, you don't. Abandon those things. just like you did in basketball, just like I did, believe it or not, in football, just like so many other, just like my son will do one day, he will abandon his dreams. So they filmed the whole thing, and you can watch the entire podcast and a behind-the-scenes mini-doc free at Onnit. There's two N's in there. Onnit.com/Adam. This is the real deal, this stuff. It is good stuff. So, and while you're there, you can save 10% on your entire order. So watch the Take a Knee episode free and go to onnit.com/Adam and check it out now. Get you 10% off. onnit.com/Adam. Let's do one more, Gina Grant.
Sure. Well, Tarantino fans might want to make their way over to Cincinnati, Ohio. That's where the Video Archive video store resides. But have you heard about this?
Well, that's where we started off. Video Archive's in Hermosa Beach.
Correct. However, this one's in Ohio, and it's more than a video store, according to CNN. If you're lucky enough to pull the correct B-grade horror flick tape off the shelf, the wall opens up to reveal a hidden speakeasy that's dedicated to the life and work of director Quentin Tarantino, who, as Brian said, worked at a store called the Video Archive before hitting it big. The bar is the brainchild of a guy named Jacob Trevino. He's a longtime Tarantino fan. He says the bar pays homage to his films, but also the films that inspired his films. So the easiest place to spot the theme is on the drink menu. They feature a cocktail like the Jackie Brown, that's bourbon, elderflower liqueur, blackberry puree, and salted honey. They have a Bloody Mia, which is a Bloody Mary with lemon juice and celery salt. And of course, a Royale with cheese is included on the bar menu.
Instead of the celery stick, there's a tampon.
Sure. Makes sense.
With an injector.
Makes total sense.
Yeah, save shot.
You have to pick the right.
Yeah, I mean, something tells me they'll probably let you in, but you got to find the right, like you got to talk to the owl at the Magic Castle in order to get in.
Where is this?
This is in Cincinnati, Ohio.
I may have to go.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
I'm always ready for the next Tarantino film.
I think I told you guys I was a Tarantino nerd, or like in the 90s. Like,
yeah,
I had the biographies. That's how I knew he worked at Video Archives. Yeah. And I'm like, they opened up a new one. So obviously this would be at least interesting to me.
How big a weirdo is he? Do you guys know? Like, I've never met him. I've never interviewed him. I love his movies, but he seems sort of not
eccentric.
Well, it seems like you couldn't sit down and talk to him about movies.
I met him at an award. He was being honored at the Japanese American Award Festival, and Pat Morita had just passed away. So I was doing a tribute to Morita and his work, and I met Tarantino, we were like one table apart, and he just kept looking at me and giving me like a
finger
Jimmy Conn finger guns,
right.
You know, and I was giving a thumbs up, and I'm trying to think how could I be his next Travolta. Afterwards at the party, he came up and I said what a big fan I was, and I study his films and I love his movies, which we all do because he's just such a visionary and a great writer of dialogue. And he went on. He was like a cinephile. He was like, well, coming from you. And I was like, seriously? But he's like, coming from you. He said, you worked with Walter Hill. You worked with John Bailey, his cinematography for Crossroads. You worked with Steve Burham, who shot this. So he had the cinematographers, directors I worked with. And he was going down, and not just the hits. I mean, some of the pretty crappy movies I was in too. He had so I was pretty impressed. And that was after, you know, drinking at the table all night.
Did he refer to the one where I believe you had progeria?
Oh, God, the aging disorder. Isn't
yes,
that kind
one of
funny
my
that
ones.
I was in a disease of the week and played this was with Laura Dern was in this film,
it's
and Betty Buckley. And it's
really
called
good.
The Three Wishes of Billy Greer. And it was a kid who had progeria, which makes you age rapidly, in which the irony of that is I'd like to believe at 55 that I don't have that.
Right. Well,
you do not.
You have a very youthful look. Right. It always cracked me up that the deaf rat guy had a friend who suffered from progeria who they would use to buy the beer.
Buy beer for the frat. Yeah.
It's actually a very sad and grotesque disease.
It's horrible.
Sort of,
that's why the joke's funny.
You just had some dusting of gray.
Crying in the Taps River.
That's so funny. Well, you're pulling out the
favorites.
Good
the,
stuff.
So there's a thing, because I'm trying to think of it, but it's kind of a here's my theory. Brian Austin Green,
the great,
now he's with what's her name from Transformers?
Oh,
Megan Fox.
Megan Fox. And there's a point where you're going,
the hell's she doing with her? I mean, she's so hot, and she's done, he's like, Brian, he's done 90210 or something. But you have to understand, Megan Fox was 13,
right,
watching him on TV.
Yeah, Dreamboat.
And there's some sort of energy to that that never really goes away.
Sure. Now,
she doesn't go like, she goes, oh, I get to marry the guy I saw first at the Peach Pit so many years ago. So you'll always have that one up on Tarantino because he saw you before you saw him.
That's true.
You'll always.
Oh,
now,
I'm going to carry that. If there's one thing I take away today, that's the thing.
Society will not recognize this.
But
this will be strictly between you and the T-Man. But you will always have. It's like somewhere. You think George Foreman. I bet you George Foreman has a brother that's 3 years older than him, mm-hmm, and George is scared of him.
Sure.
Because at some point that guy was 17 and George was 14, and that guy used to whoop his ass.
Right.
You'll always have that with Tarantino.
Gotta love it.
You gotta love it.
Like to a young Gina grad, Ralph Macchio will always be that kid with progeria.
What?
Let's talk about, before we wrap it up, the Deuce.
Yeah.
This is on HBO.
Yeah, September 10th.
Tell me about it.
It's a David Simon show who created The Wire. Among others. And it stars James Franco, Maggie Gyllenhaal. I play a crooked vice cop in the early 70s. The whole series is an eight-episode series, and I think they're hoping for more. And my character wasn't killed off. Oh, I just gave away the whole thing. Yet, so who knows? There might be more life there. I'm in 5 of the 8 episodes. This is Times Square. This is 42nd Street in the early 70s.
Perfect.
No Lion King, no Elmo.
No.
A whole lot of porn, pimps, and hookers. And I play a vice cop who's on the take, and it's very ensemble, the piece. I mean, certainly Franco and Gyllenhaal are the leads in the show, but there's a ton of actors that you know and seen on other HBO shows and or David Simon shows. So I was just, it was just a cool gig to do. Got to wear the sideburns and smoke in every scene and act like my dad did back in the early 70s. Except he wasn't a crooked cop.
Yeah, he was a pimp.
He was a pimp.
HBO's now, it's sort of like Porsche. Like if they're going to put their name on a mountain bike, you know it's great.
Right.
Like it's just, it's HBO's coming out with this series. Like, oh, good, I'm in. Like, we talked about Tarantino's coming out with a movie. Good, I'm in.
Right.
Like, it's great when you can get that kind of reputation or quality that just you put your name before it, and everyone goes, oh, great, we're going to watch it.
And the trailer is slick.
Yeah,
it's
very sexy. It looks good. I'm excited to see it. You know?
It hits when?
It's September 10th. I come in episode 2, so that would be, I guess, the 17th.
So don't bother with the premiere.
Don't bother with the first, the pilot. It's, you know. But and Franco directed a couple episodes, one of which I was in, so it was kind of fun to work with him in that respect. And it's good stuff, so I hope it takes off.
I know it will. And I hope you take off and go get yourself some Geico car insurance. See what I did there, man?
Beautiful. So
go
smooth.
To geico.com. 15 minutes. You could be saving 15% or more on your auto insurance. Save that money. Go out and get yourself a Karate Kid 4 DVD. I think I'd get it in Blu-ray.
Mm-hmm.
The cinematography is amazing.
Just
go
yourself to
geico.com. Spend 15 minutes and you could be saving 15% or more on your car insurance. That is Geico. Irvine Improv Saturday. This Saturday, we're doing a podcasting masterclass. We'll all be out there. So come on out and see. Yes.
I'm working with Chris Maxipato. We're going to do a little demo on how the drops work and everything. People ask me all the time, how does the drop machine work? How does it all work?
You're going to give away the secret sauce?
To the people who show up? Yes, I am.
All right.
I'm keeping my secret sauce. I got one of those Pepe stickers.
The Pepe sticker's off for me this weekend. We got all the secret sauce.
Bring a slicker, front row. Stickers off. The movie, King of the Underdogs, it's available now at our website, chassis, chassy.com, and lots of other interesting offerings there as well. You can check that out. You can shoot Ralph a tweet at Ralph Macchio. And let's see, Derek, what do we got for you? Got a place to send you a tweet or a note or anything?
Yeah, it's at DWJohnson16. Yeah.
So, until next time, the sound for Derek and Ralph and Gina and Bald Sam. Mahalo.
The crane move is bullshit.
Follow the Adam Carolla Show on Twitter at Adam Carolla Show. Follow Ace on Twitter at Adam Carolla. Also like him on Facebook because he needs you to. Gina Grad is on the radio weekday mornings at 100.3 The Sound in L.A. And subscribe to Take a Knee for a weekly dose of inspiration and motivation. You need both. And we'll see you Saturday at the Podcasting Masterclass at the Irvine Improv. Found out I'm working all day. Get your tickets for everything Adam Carolla, including the live podcasts and the Carolla Cruise in November, Man 3 events, books, movies, and more at adamcarolla.com.